It's time for the world's largest indoor garage sale, brought to you by Goodwill Industries of Lane and South Coast Counties. Thousands will walk through the doors of the Lane County Fairgrounds March 28th. Vendor spaces are limited. Get yours today. To get your 10x10 spot, stop by our office today, 1200 Executive Parkway, Suite 440, right across from Red Robin, open 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It's the world's largest indoor garage sale, Saturday, March 28th at the Lane County Fairgrounds. Hurry, spaces are limited. Brought to you by 95.3 The Score.
And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to a Wednesday. We've got, what do we have planned for today? Like a radio show, maybe? We'll see. We shall see what we shall see. Bottom of the hour, Melissa Lombardi will talk some Duck softball. 4:30, Todd McKim will talk some Cal basketball. They're in town tomorrow night. 8 o'clock tip-off. Obviously, we'll have all the action. We'll have our pregame at 7, the OSN pregame at 7:30, the call of the game with Joey Mack at 8, the postgame. And if you're looking for it on TV, ISP and Tote. It's a rather sizable weekend in Pac-12 basketball. We'll have our Green Hill Pet of the Week, a chance for you to meet Red. We'll have a Crunch Exchange at the end of Crunch Time. I was reading a terrific story by Steve Mims of the Register Guard about Jeff Potter. If you were around, as they say, in the day, when Oregon basketball was in the midst of an NCAA tournament drought, a long one, made it early in the 60s, NESPA at all in the 70s, NESPA in the 80s, NESPA in the early 90s, and then in 1992, they hired Jerry Green. I think he was from UNC, Greenville, Asheville, one of those. Took over for Don Munson, who had started to slip a bit. They went from 13 wins, almost a 500 team the last year. They had the magnificent Terrell Brandon. And then in 92, 6 wins. 15-13, then 6 wins, and there was a whole big to-do when he left. They tried to reassign him, so if they were going to pay him, he was going to be like an assistant golf coach. If you were around then, it was really a very odd circumstance. But in year three, Jerry Green turned the Ducks from a 10-win team, a tournament team. Who'd have thunk it? And I remember going to a big game late in the season. It might have been the end of the season because back then the rule was if you were above 500 in this conference, if you had single-digit losses, 19 wins, whatever the formula was at the time, it always added up to a tournament berth. And so I think it might have been the Stanford game. Which, by the way, I'm looking at this exactly 25 years ago today. The Cardinal came in highly ranked, and Oregon beat them. And it was like, wow, they're going on the road. Are we going to? Because to me, it was almost surreal. It was like, man, it would be so cool if Oregon. I remember thinking back then, it'd be so cool to see, you know, the team from my town, which I had only been here less than 5 years, be in the tournament. That would be awesome. Of course, now we take it for granted under this staff, you know, the run that started under Coach Ken of never going to going in 2000, 2002, 2003, 2007, 2008. And back then, Potter was a senior. He was one of their bigs, along with Damon Runyon. You know, I'm looking at this roster now, and obviously remember Kenya Wilkins, who was the point guard, and his name has surfaced recently. Orlando Williams was their sniper. At the time, he was probably one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the program. I guess it was Kevin Mixon was on that Terrell Brandon team. And Henry Madden and Daryl Parker. There's a name I kind of forgotten. And Jamal Lawrence. And they got to the tournament. And I'll tell you the truth. What happened was they got a terrible draw. You know, mistakes, excuses don't work. Especially after a quarter century. It might be time to move on. But they were a six seed. Texas won what was at the time the last Southwest Conference championship. So they were a major conference tournament winner, and they seeded them 11th. You see that now occasionally, you know, when you get to the 7th or 8th team out of the Big Ten or the ACC or something like that. But, I mean, this was a team who went 23-7, 11-3 in the old Southwest Conference, and it was like, how the hell did they end up with an 11 seed? And anyway, Oregon also, by the way, Oregon also played like crap and lost by 17. But Jeff Potter is now an agent, so he's a very tall agent, I'll tell you that much. But yeah, I remember that. I remember it well. And, you know, the thought that Oregon would be a regular in the big dance. And, you know, it's kind of like the statistics we were running over the women who their 94 wins over 3 years is one more than their best four-year run ever, which was from 79 to 82. The amount of conference wins they've had the last 3 years, I think, is the exact equal to the previous 8 years. So it's just when you see a program lifted and kind of a rise up, I mean, from 1962 through 1999, the Duck men made the big dance once. Then they made it in the 2000s, five times. Then when the decision was made not to retain Ernie Kent, by year three, Dana Altman had them in the tournament, and they've been every year except one. I mean, to think that this is all those numbers I just ran, and now they're going to make their seventh tournament run in 8 years, and, you know, Final Four, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Sweet 16. Yeah, he's Altman's never got run in the first round as a Duck coach, right? Right, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, Chris Duarte will not be playing this weekend. And the jury is out. It's a hung jury on Will Richardson. And, yeah, that's not good timing. These are pretty important games with, you know, the one seed still in their grasp. But where are my standings? Men's basketball standings. So with five losses, they obviously could get to seven. But I'm just trying to think if anybody's read. Is it possible at 11-7, Oregon could lose a bye? I mean, I guess if you go by the letter and use crazy things like math. Yeah, because Arizona, Stanford, USC, and Colorado all have seven losses, so I guess they can get into some kind of zany tiebreaker. Now with UCLA, they can do no worse than a three seed because they only have one game left. So, yeah, there's much to consider. Two rivalry games this weekend. So tomorrow night you'd have four games, eight teams. Utah and the Coloradians don't play until Saturday. And what's the other? Oh, the crosstown rivalry, USC and UCLA. So, yeah, much TBD. And like I said, the 6 o'clock games are Washington, who, you know, sub-500, looking to get a fourth win in conference. That's a 6 o'clock game against ASU. That's the lead-in game to ESPN's coverage of Oregon. Then Oregon State taking on Stanford. That's a Pac-12 network game at 6. Then there's a 7:30 game, Arizona-Washington State. Cats, 19-10. Things go south for them, and they get upset, man. That's going to be a dipperoo because 3-6th in this conference right now is not a real resume builder. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. In a little bit, we'll get through this segment, and then we'll do our interview with Coach Lombardi, and we'll have a crunch exchange. But in the 4 o'clock hour, I want to play the sound from Daryl Morey, who's the Houston Rocket GM, and also some sound from Alex Rodriguez, because he had some pretty bold things to say about the Houston pain in the Astros. And, you know, the whole cheating scandal. And normally you'd say, well, dude, you are not the one to be doling out advice. But kind of like Jose Canseco when he wrote Juice and everybody was like, he's just bitter and angry because he's out of the game and he's been blackballed. And, oh, so that was, oh, really? That it? Wow. Suddenly it was like, maybe we should actually listen to this guy. And they always say that if you get a spy to turn and be a double agent, they're always the most dangerous ones because they know where the bodies are buried. It's kind of like, oh, you ever see that movie Catch Me If You Can with Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio?
Steve, at this point, if you ask me, have you ever seen that movie, you should just know the answer is no.
Do you? So what, like,
the last movie I watched was actually this weekend. I watched A Quiet Place. It was on Amazon Prime. But that movie's like two, three years old at this point.
Well, this one's like, I don't know, 20 years old?
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've
okay,
seen,
you know, sometimes when I ask,
poster,
sometimes I'm asking, you know, out there if they've ever seen it.
Oh, well, you said you and I'm here.
Yeah, I was looking at you too. My bad. I'm going to put up a screen so I don't have to look at you anymore.
Just close your eyes. You know, it's a speaking show.
By the way, somebody just texted, how the hell haven't you seen Catch Me If You Can?
I don't know. I don't watch movies. Like, I'm not the biggest movie guy. It just
there's
happens.
The answer.
All right.
You happy out there, Texter Jones?
Yeah, Texter Jones.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Fred. Fred, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. We heard that.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, we did. It was on the news that they're not going to be held in stands in to watch games. Do you think that's going to affect Austin?
What, you got to run that by me. Now remember, you're not talking to your friends. You're talking to somebody who's actually focused and paying attention and has information at their hands.
It was on the news that in Italy,
oh,
they're going to have games and not have fans. Is that going to affect us, you think?
Thanks a lot, Fred. Did you have any idea what he was talking about?
I could have connected the dots without the follow-up question, but you asked it, so I was probably going to come in with the supplemental info to help you connect the dots, but I figured it out. Yeah.
Yes.
It's
so apparently
connect the dots picture.
Italy has announced, which I believe the correct term from the news is, for Europe, Italy is like the epicenter of the coronavirus. So they have closed some schools, and I think they've decided for X amount of time they are not going to have – they're going to allow games to continue, be it soccer or whatnot. No fans will be allowed to attend, and we don't even know what to expect in a month from this. I mean, this is a virus, and how it – and I'm not going to try to – play the expert card here. I'm just going to parrot what I've heard, and that is, you know, in a month, we'll decide how things have spread or been maintained and make a determination. But I'll tell you what, I would not be surprised if we reached a point, if this thing turned towards the positive, where there weren't, you know, it depends what part of the country you're from. They just have, you know, confirmation of people who've died now on both coasts. You've gone from Oregon, Washington, California to New York and I think North Carolina. And so there will be a determination where, okay, the outbreak seems more severe in the Pacific Northwest. So for the next 6 weeks, we will have games, whether it's baseball, softball, or spring sports, or MLB. But, yeah, we're literally not going to have fans at the game. But there's no way to talk about September right now. I mean, I think that there's a true danger because you get a news report and then you get follow-up and it's like, yeah, the Tokyo Games, at this point, they haven't impacted the prelims, the trials. Like, right now, here in Eugene, ironically, hosting the 2020 Olympic trials. So the plan is, okay, those are going to be held, and the winners are going to go to Tokyo. That's now, March 4th. March 11th, who the hell knows? 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Josh. Josh, good afternoon. How's it going?
Pretty good. And yourself?
All right. What's up?
So I had a hypothetical. Everyone's talking about the quarterbacks, you know, moving. And there's obviously a lot of free agents this year. Obviously, we're from Eugene. So what about Mariota to the Patriots, assuming that Tom Brady leaves?
Yeah, that's an interesting assumption. I have not heard a rumor about Marcus to the Pats, and I don't know. I mean, if Brady is thinking of leaving, it's because he's not in love with the offensive line or their arsenal. So would that even be? I know you think Patriots and like a light goes on and you hear the hallelujah chorus, but you know, who are the receivers? Is the running game stable? Is that offense a good fit for him? Off the bat, it doesn't seem like a great dot to connect. Okay, did we lose Josh? All right. I heard Marcus, if they are going to throw in the towel on Trubisky or offer a challenge, Marcus to the Bears.
That made, I think, more sense when Mark Helfrich was still the offensive coordinator, but Helfrich got, I believe, the he got the axe as more or less being the problems with the offense last year, not necessarily Mitch Trubisky regressing back to North Carolina college quarterback Trubisky as opposed to the guy who was running the ball all over the place. Aaron Fentress has brought that up a lot, but I think that's part of his Bear fandom and his duck coverage of
that's
Marcus.
Not where I got it. I heard it on CBS Sports Radio today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a plausible landing space because Marcus, I think at this point, is probably going to be a backup somewhere, but a backup that's got the ability to actually push the starter. And if you push the starter to the point where the starter collapses or it'll make the team better or the starter will falter and then you've got a starting caliber backup right behind him in Marcus. So wherever he ends up, I think he's likely to be a backup at first.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a team out there. And by the way, the Bears have a new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. And I'll be 50 times as honest with you as I can. I read that name and I was like, oh, he's the guy from, I never heard of him. I think he might be a college guy. I guess he was also a quarterback coach for Seattle for a while. Ooh. And Philadelphia, the Eagles. And so a quarterback coach, I guess he got fired from the Bengals, which the minute you take a job with the Bengals, you're like, I'm going to get fired real soon. This is a bad situation for everyone involved. But I'm sorry, when the quarterback circumstance surfaces and I still can't believe that we're now 4 days into people still talking about Brady to the Niners. I mean, it seems to be gaining steam, and there's no reason to think it's for any reason except for national shows keep bringing up what would happen if Brady went to the Niners. Because, I don't know, what if all along Belichick was like, I wish we kept Garoppolo, but I lost out to Brady and the creepy owner.
That's exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to keep Garoppolo. He was thinking years ago, this is the guy we can do stuff with. I'm ready to let Brady go. And Bobby Kraft said, no, Brady's won us stuff. I want to keep him around. So they did. And Belichick took a worse deal to send him to a better situation in San Francisco to take one second round pick rather than Cleveland at the trade deadline 6 months earlier were offering them like first round picks and names to firstborn children in the future as well. And Belichick still said no.
Here's a scenario. So now Belichick has convinced Kraft that Jimmy G is the answer. And he's going to do a straight trade, Brady for Garoppolo, to San Francisco. And by the way, that sounded insane in my head, and it sounded just as insane in my ear just now saying those words.
Can you do a sign and trade in the NFL? Is that possible?
I have no idea. I don't see where John Lynch, who has made some bold moves, almost won the Super Bowl, is now going to be like, yeah, I'll take Brady for a year and basically throw a wrench into everything we've been creating here. A 43-year-old who, by the way, clearly dipped in almost every major category. Yards per game, completion percentage, yards per attempt, yards per completion, touchdowns, way down. We're all talking like career lows, and I do not believe at that age, in that sport, at that position, that he's bouncing back anywhere with a 37 touchdown, 11, you know, 7 interception, 4,700 yard season. I just don't see it.
Oh, no, nobody cares about the numbers statistically that he's going to put up. It's all about just getting into the playoffs because he's Tom bleeping Brady, and that's where he's at his best. Until he runs into Derrick Henry and the Titans.
I think
Ryan Tannehill and the Titans.
If you notice, it's been very silent from the Bay Area because they're like, why even comment on something that it's kind of our call? I know Brady and Belichick and Kraft have a strong will, but they can't do the Jedi mind meld to Lynch. This is the quarterback you're looking for. It's just not going to happen. All right, break time has arrived. We'll come back. We'll have a Coors Light update with Nick, and then we'll talk some Duck softball with Coach Lombardi, all coming at you next. 95-3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
LeVert. Oh, he can't miss! Caris LeVert is smoking hot!
Shot clock is down to 9. 1 minute gone by in overtime. LeVert around Ogilvy. Banks it home. Caris LeVert has 42. LeVert back in. Fade. Oh, he's a one-man wrecking crew! A stunning comeback for the Brooklyn Nets on a career night for Caris LeVert.
Man, absolute insanity. The Nets scored 51 points in the fourth quarter. That forced overtime. And Caris LeVert, for you Michigan fans out there, third-year guy from Wolvie Land, a career-high 51 points. By the way, at the end of the third quarter, he had 14. He scored 37 points in the fourth quarter in overtime. And more importantly, the Nets, who I really don't like, beat the jerk store Celtics. So I kind of like them now. Welcome back. Crunch Time, 95-3, The Score. Your home for Nick and Steve, weekdays, 3 to 6. By the way, we're going to lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Remember, we'd be delighted to hear from you. You could text us, 321. 0824. Let's talk some softball. Off to a huge start, 17-2. The season has taken them to Mexico, Houston, Southern California, Oklahoma. This week they're back at the Jane. Follow on Twitter, use the handle at Melissa Lombardi. Coach Lombardi, thanks for the time. How's life treating you these days?
Good. How are you?
Awesome. You know, I know it was Stillwater in Tulsa, not Norman, but for you personally, what was it like to be back in that part of the Sooner State facing teams like that and a longtime rival like Oklahoma State?
It was nice. I mean, Oklahoma's been a great place for myself and my family, so anytime we can go back there, it was nice. I've been playing against Oklahoma State and Tulsa for a long time, so it just felt kind of normal.
A little sense of normalcy. How nice. One of your assistants, Megan Langenfeld, who was a superstar in this conference for UCLA when they won the national title, then worked at Stanford. Whenever I talk to people about your program, her name comes up pretty quickly. What could you tell us about her role and all she brings to the table as one of your assistants?
She's been tremendous. If you know who Megan Langenfeld is, she played at UCLA. She won a national championship there. She was the MVP of the World Series tournament. She got the wins on the mound and hit a bomb to allow them to go ahead. So she's okay. She's not very good. She's okay.
And as far as an assistant, I mean, you know, we're kind of trained football mentality. You got a coordinator for offense and a coordinator for defense. What's her primary role within your program?
She's our pitching coach here. And what is great is that she's pitched in the Pac-12 and she's played in it, and she understands how tough the schedule can be and the great competition we're going to play every weekend. So it's very relatable. She's able to help these athletes understand that and how to thrive in the Pac-12. So she's been very instrumental in our program.
One of the things that absolutely pops with your Ducks this year, I mean, you're like a bunch of sprinters. The gun sounds and you explode out of the gate. I was reading the notes. You've outscored your opponents, I think it's 58-0 in the first two innings. How do you attribute your ability to just hit the ground running like that?
I love what they're doing. Haley Cruz being in the leadoff spot has been huge. She's constantly on base, whether she's throwing a walk or hitting a ball in the gap. And then just recently we shift our lineup around a little bit and put Tara McGowan in the two spot, who could hit in the three or in the four. So she's been doing a good job of driving Haley in. And then from there, you've got Rachel, Allie Bunker. We talk a lot about just passing the bat, and they've been doing a good job of that.
Talking Duck softball with the head coach, Melissa Lombardi. The Oregon tournament this weekend, starting Friday afternoon at Jane Sanders Stadium. We had Haley Cruz on a couple of weeks back. I like to say she kind of brings that joy of the game, plays with such passion. And, Coach, you don't have a lot of seniors on this team. So how important is she not only being a great, great player, but one of your leaders?
Really important, on and off the field. You know, our younger athletes are able to look to her for guidance. She's been great. I'm really proud of everything that she's done.
You always hear how critical it is. Keep the top local talent from leaving Eugene. Enter Ariel Carlson from Marist. I think she was a two-time state player of the year. She's been DH'ing some right field, and you've stuck her right in the middle of your lineup. So how pleased are you with her performance so far, you know, as a freshman?
Very pleased. I'm very excited what she's been doing at the plate. And I feel like this last weekend you could see her start to go to another level. She's really starting to understand the game plans against the opponent and what she's, you know, going up looking for and how she wants to handle rise ball pitchers, drop ball pitchers. So I've been very impressed and pleased with her.
Regardless of the level, I mean, there's a cliche about it really helps to be able to catch the ball. You've played 19 games. Only six errors. I mean, I was read one box score. Dayton had half that many against you in one game. I mean, as a coach, you obviously, you nitpick, you want perfection. But, man, six errors in 19 games. That's some pretty darn good glove work.
Very good. And that's that young group that were freshmen last year. And they're young, but they're veteran players. And I think all the time that they all got on the field as freshmen has really paid off for them as sophomores.
Well, that's just, I went looking around. I mean, that's one of the best numbers in the country. A couple final thoughts, talking softball with Coach Lombardi. As far as pitching, we know Jordan Dale shouldered a crazy load last year. You brought in Brooke Yunez as a transfer. 72 strikeouts, 46 innings. How big of an addition has the lefty been to kind of, I guess, spread the wealth around on your pitching staff?
Definitely. To actually talk this year and have a solid staff where any of them could start, any of them could come in relief, has been huge for us up to this point. And I know it's going to be a big deal for us going into the pack. Brooke has great movement. She's a veteran. She's got a lot of innings. And she's got the experience. Smart ideas. She's a grad transfer. She's a senior this year. She's been phenomenal. We've been able to see Jordan at her best versus a worn-out Jordan. And then McKenna, our freshman, she's right there with them, learning and understanding how to go about this. So I've been pleased with all four, and I still think they all have so much more to show and give. Like, I don't think you've seen their best yet.
And lastly, I mentioned all the places you've been, but now you take that great record. It's time for the tournament this weekend. So you and your team and your staff and your players, how stoked are you to get to play before the Duck fans and, you know, start getting ready with Pac-12 play just about, I think, 9 days away?
We cannot wait. When we got back from Oklahoma, I told them all to take their suitcases and put them away and enjoy being at home. We love our fans. We've got tremendous support from them, and we cannot wait to play in front of them.
Folks, she's Coach Lombardi. Ducks off to an awesome start. They're home. We got Loyola Marymount, Portland State, Seattle this weekend. You got two doubleheaders, a singleton on Sunday. Coach, it's great catching up. Congratulations on the awesome start. Best of luck this weekend, and definitely look forward to talking again soon.
Yep, that sounds great. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Melissa Lombardi. Yeah, the growing pains they experienced last year with all of the defections, and all of a sudden you had a bunch of freshmen playing. All of a sudden you get 50-some-odd games under your belt, and now you enter your second year. Yeah, technically they're sophomores, but they are experienced vets, and some of them are playing just out of their minds already. And, of course, great stadium, great level of support. And I know some of you who, every time softball comes up, text me, "What about this year? What about this year?" And a couple of you have tried to egg me on into bets as if they're going to make the tournament. Last year, I won one bet, and I was like, I'm not betting against them this year. All right? So the answer is a flat no.
Although the last time you did it, you did get us some brownies. So maybe if you wanted to, you know, kind of reach back into that well and get us some snacks again or something.
Well, that was last year, and I was like, look, you can't lose everything they lost and expect to compete at a high level. I mean, it would be different if they did that kind of a transformation in the Sun Belt, but not this cutthroat league, which just top to bottom is just loaded with talent. You know, there are certain sports where you could have the debate, and certainly basketball, men's basketball, football, you could say, well, where does the Pac-12 rate? Well, when it comes to women's basketball and softball, just there is no debate. It's like 1 or 1A at worst.
I'm just saying, if somebody offers you more baked goods, maybe, just or something. Just for the sake of it,
I see what you mean.
You should maybe consider that. Just, you know, maybe, if not for you, for me. Because I'll eat the snacks.
All right. 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Appreciate the time of Coach Lombardi. Let's bring in Cody. Cody, good afternoon. How's it going?
Pretty good. I just want to start off by saying it is such a cool feeling to have a local team kind of be viable on a national level on just about all fronts. But what I wanted to mention, Steve, is did you see the Blazer game against Orlando a couple nights ago?
I did catch a chunk of it.
I think it was the end of the third quarter there, and I'm not sure who got the actual foul call, but did you see the play with Hazonia grabbing the referee's arm after McCollum got called on a pushing or something like that?
Oh, yeah. A, I saw it, and B, if you pay attention, a lot of people saw it because it made the highlights, and people were like, well, what the hell was that?
It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in basketball. It was almost like he was trying to break up a fight between the referee and McCollum and kind of, you know, hey, don't blow your whistle. And he kind of grabbed him. And I've been there playing flag football a few years ago. I kind of hit a ref to show him how a guy hit me illegally and immediately knew that, oh, crap, I'm getting ejected, you know? Never got ejected from a game in my life, but I know you can't make contact with a ref, you know?
Well, he was trying to
hold his arm down for a good 10 seconds.
No, he was trying to block the ref from teeing up CJ, and it cost him $25,000. Yeah, touching the refs.
Did CJ end up getting the tech, or did they end up switching it to Hazonia?
Oh, you know what? I got so wired into the actual grabbing of the official, because McCollum was ticked off. He had the ball, he walked over to the ref, and then Hazonia was kind of intervened, and he teed him up. Yeah, no, only 44 got teed up. He actually ended up, mission accomplished, he saved McCollum.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
that's... Exactly, I'll let you go, Steve, but, you know, was it why, or was it kind of one of those bonehead, like, lost in translation things? It's one of the funniest things I've seen in pro sports, though.
No, it was a first. Hey, starting to break up a little bit, Cody. Appreciate the call. Well, first of all, the ref is kind of in a more, how can I put this, contemplative mood. He sees McCollum walking to him with the ball in a very combative way, and kind of McCollum shakes his left arm off of one of his players, and then Hazonia grabs the ref, and the ref just walks away, whistle, and tees him up. I mean, it wasn't like he was like, what are you, his reaction was touch, tee, bye. So you got that going for you, which is nice. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Beyond the Tom Brady insanity, I also want to get to Alex Rodriguez and his comments about Houston and cheating, along with, did you guys hear the story about Ben Parlay Pats? He's a gambler who allegedly made some really gruesome and substantial and, oh, by the way, illegal threats to carry out an act of violence against some athletes. And a U.S. attorney, Maria Chapa Lopez, got involved, and Instagram, by the way, when people realize or don't realize the digital footprint thing, it's like, really? There were Instagram messages sent to a Pepperdine basketball player after the team beat San Francisco. Your throat will be severed open with a dull knife. Wow. And so, yeah, this guy made a name for himself and won about $1 million. And the details and some of these threats are absolutely NSFW. So I'm going to read them over before I actually quote them, because we've We don't want to get in trouble.
Even then, you sometimes get yourself in trouble.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That brings us to break time. We'll do just that. We'll come back, and upon our return, we pay homage to the bell. The Crunch Exchange is next. 95.3 The Score.
All rise. All rise and respect the bell. It is time for the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up crunch time on Wednesdays around here. I bring up a prospectus from the world of sports, and Steve then tells us if he is buying or selling or maybe sometimes pending on that prospectus. We begin. We talk a lot in life about transformation and growth. We love a good comeback story, hearing about somebody hitting rock bottom and fighting their way all the way back up to the top. Hearing about the highs and lows in life make the human story that much better. And as weird as it sounds, one of the better turnarounds in life has been Alex Rodriguez. The superstar baseball player was the face of baseball since he was a teenager, made hundreds of millions of dollars, and was going to be the one to finally take down Hank Aaron's and then Barry Bonds' home run records because he was doing it clean. And then he was pretty much the villain when he signed with the Yankees, chasing money in a ring. Then he was suspended for a full season for testing positive for steroids and became a supervillain. He fought and fought and fought that the test was wrong or it was okay because everybody else was doing it. No, don't blame me. It was my cousin. Excuse after excuse. Then A-Rod retired and everything changed. Not just his appearances on Shark Tank, dating J-Lo, his incredible baseball analysis. People then started to like him, like not just stopping saying the bad things behind his back, but they were saying good things to his face. Yesterday, A-Rod finally came through the looking glass with one of the most honest things he's ever said, talking about the Houston Astros and how they're not handling their schedule all that well. Quote, from a guy who's had as many mistakes as anybody on the biggest stage, I served the longest suspension in MLB history. And you know what? I deserved that. As a result, I came back and I owned it after acting like a buffoon for a long time. We now live in a super weird world where A-Rod is the true north on the compass of morality we should all follow, the prospectus. A-Rod has turned the corner and is now a good guy rather than a sports villain.
He's turned the corner, for sure. I don't even think that's a negotiation. Good guy? Maybe a little too early for that, so I'm going to go pending.
Ted, my boy, it's going to be legend. Wait for it.
A little bit of this, some of these, some of those. Sports governing bodies all over the world are struggling as to how they need to handle the coronavirus. Major League Baseball, the NHL, the NBA are all working towards ways to protect players and fans from contracting and spreading the virus. The NBA released a memo saying that players should not high-five fans. I mean, yeah, it's not perfect, but it's something. In Italy today, it was announced that all sporting events will be held behind closed doors until April 3rd in an attempt to slow down the potential exposure of people to the virus. This is something that's also being considered in college basketball with the NCAA tournament, and it's also being done in hockey leagues in Switzerland. And the idea isn't all that bad. These major events can bring tens of thousands of fans together from all over a state or a country and exposing that many more people to a potentially deadly virus. But when you start to think about all the germs and things that you touch on a daily basis, you're going to want to shut yourself into your own home and become a bubble boy. But the fun of sports is the atmosphere and the crowd that brings people to the events like the NCAA tournament. And they've got their advisory panel in place to monitor the spread of the virus to see if certain rounds of the NCAA tournament should be played also in front of no fans. So these prospectus, the NCAA should play the first rounds of the NCAA tournament behind closed doors.
Wow. It's too early. I know that it starts 2 weeks from now. Actually, 2 weeks from yesterday with the play-in games in Dayton. I think this question was made for this segment because we may know substantially more by the time we get off tonight or by the time we sign on tomorrow or by the time we get to the arena tomorrow. Ah. So for the first time ever, I'm going back-to-back pending.
Ted, my boy, it's going to be legend. Wait for it.
truly a legend wait for it moment here. On a much less serious and probably less life-threatening level, the Sacramento Kings. Since the All-Star break, the Kings are 6-1, and that's good enough for the best record in the NBA, tied with the Bucks and the Lakers. They jump from 14th all the way up to 9th and are staring down the Memphis Grizzlies for the 8th seed. De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield are averaging 20 a game. Harrison Barnes is actually still out there, leading the team in minutes played, and at 27 is one of the older veterans, which just sounds insane. And baby Bill Luke Walton is leading the charge. The Kings are back? I don't know. The race
back
the,
from what?
They're from something. The race for the 8th seed is fun. The Kings are on a hot streak. The Grizz have lost 5 of their last 7. Our Zers have lost 6 of their last 8. The Spurs are the second hottest team in this race, and they're just at 500, while your Pellies are also at 500, and they've got Zion, who's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's a 5-team battle for a one-time chance at getting swept in 3 games by the Lakers. The prospectus, the Sacramento Kings will be the 8th seed in the West.
I still think when the dust settles, Memphis is better. They've gotten on, like you said, they've won 6 of 7, but they're still 3 back. So once they realize they're the Kings again, there'll probably be some slippage. Although I will give you credit that Harrison Barnes, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, that's a really nice young nucleus. But no, I'm still a believer that Memphis will be the ones who get swept by the Lakers in the first round. So sell it.
Swept in 3 games, maybe?
First time ever.
Maybe. Last one here. A very scary moment in last night's Montreal Canadiens.
Les Canadiens!
And the New York Islanders game as Islander defender Johnny Boychuk took a skate to the eye.
Ugh.
He got tangled up with Arturi Lehkonen in front of the net, and as Arturi went down, his leg flew up, and it got Boychuk under his visor and cut his eye. Isles general manager Lou Lamoriello said today that Boychuk is fine, and the blade only got his eyelid, which is insane, and a plastic surgeon helped heal the wound with 90 stitches, and he's going to be okay. Now, the NHL has worked really hard to make their game on the ice as safe as possible, which is crazy, because you're skating on frozen water with knives on your feet in an environment where the sport embraces you stopping the puck with your teeth. One potential solution would be full cages. The pros don't want this because it's no good for their on-ice vision, and the players' faces would be blocked out more, and that hurts markability and promotions. Visors are already mandated for players coming into the league, but in last night's case, the skate got under the visor, which is maybe more than likely a 1 in a million fluke. Again, when you're playing a game with knives on your feet, your game can only be so safe. The prospectus, the NHL should require players to wear a full cage.
I've seen a picture of Boychuk on the ice. I didn't know if there was a video available, and I'm like, I don't want to see it. I saw the Clint Malarchuk injury going back like 37 years, and it looked like he got his throat slit by Jack the Ripper. So what was the prospectus again?
The NHL should mandate players wearing full cages.
That's not going to happen. So the bottom line is, whether I think it's right or wrong, I don't ever see that happening. And they will say that this kind of injury is so infrequent and it's a freak that it might not be 100% presentable. So I'm going to sell that. All right. Good luck in prison.
It's crazy because I saw the video, and when you think skate cuts player's eye, like there's going to be a ton of blood everywhere, it happened so fast, and Boychuk got off the ice so quick that he either stopped any bleeding with his hand, or because of where he got cut, like there just wasn't going to be a lot of blood. So you expect it to be super gory, and then
with your eye, though, yeah. Unless you get shot like Mo Green in The Godfather, I don't know if there's going to be an awful lot of blood. All right, looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour, we'll start seriously pondering Oregon and Cal tomorrow night as we talk with Todd McKim of the Golden Bear Radio Network. That's at 4:30. Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
What are we talking about, Skip?